The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
It's so nice to be here sitting with you tonight instead of sitting in the traffic on 880 from Berkeley to here. So much nicer to be here than to be there. First, I want to ask, who is here for the first time tonight? Yeah, welcome. Anyone else from this? Yeah. Oh, great. Welcome. 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 Wonderful. Yay. So tonight's talk is inspired by a sutta from Majjhima Nikaya, the middle-length discourses of the Buddha, this book. And for those who think, oh, this is going to be heavy duty, don't worry, it's going to relate to our life, I hope. And if it doesn't and you fall asleep, please come at the end of the talk and tell me that I failed, because I want to make it interesting and relevant to our life. So hold me accountable, will you? Thank you. Great. So actually, I'm really inspired by this sutta. It's really beautiful. It has such beautiful similes in it, as you will hear in a moment. So I'm so excited to share it with you. And it's also a very radical teaching on abiding in the mind of peace or loving kindness is quite radical, as you will see. But of course, don't take my word for it. Decide for yourself. So here's the story. We'll weave the story. So basically, a bunch of monks went to the Buddha. And I think I already mentioned this is the simile of the saw, right? I think I mentioned that. Okay. So a bunch of monks went to the Buddha and said, well, there's this monk whose name is, where was the name? Mollya Paguna. Mollya Paguna, who's a monk. And he's really sitting and spending a lot of time with the nuns, this monk. And also when somebody speaks unkindly about the nuns, he gets very angry. And also when somebody speaks not negatively about him in front of the nuns, he gets very, very angry. So you see what's going on, right? So they come and tell the Buddha about this. And so actually, let's put ourselves in his situation. So, okay, so you're the Buddha. Okay, let's do a moment of reflection. Close your eyes. You're the Buddha. You're the head of this order. Let's bring it forward. Let's make it relevant to your life. So what would it be? You're the head of the family. How would it work? Also, that might be less relevant. Okay, let's go with the Buddha for now. Okay, so you're the Buddha. Somebody comes and tells you this, that this monk is acting very angrily and gets aggressive, basically. Somebody's acting aggressively in a situation like this. What would you tell them? What would you do in a situation like this?
Can we open our eyes?
Yeah, please do. Okay, now you can open the eyes. Yeah. So I'm going to take some votes. So anyone for chastising the monk? Anyone would do that? Any hands? Anyone? No? No one would chastise the monk. Okay. Would anyone tell the monk, stop hanging out with the nuns? Would anyone do that? Yeah, anyone would do that? No? Okay, what would you do? I want to hear some ideas. What would you do if you were the Buddha?
I would ask him to talk and see what's going on.
Okay, you. Okay, you would ask him to see what's going on. Okay. So basically sort of, okay, so he does that. Okay, and then any other ideas about which way you would try to sort of direct him? Any ideas on that? I guess it would depend on what he says, right? Yeah, okay, all right, yeah, I'll give you that. Any other thoughts? What would you do?
I
Yeah.
Maybe ask the people that are complaining about the person.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So yes. Thank you. So thank you for doing this reflection, because I think this makes it more interesting. Like, what would you do if a case like this happened? If you were the Buddha or something like this happened in your family? Okay. So Buddha basically does something similar to those, and then offers some very interesting radical teachings after that that I want to share with you. So first, basically, he talks to the monk. He talks to Moliya Pugana. Like, okay, I want to talk to you. You know, what's going on? Basically, you know, do you still want to be a monk? Is this, I mean, are you still on board, basically? And he's still on board. And then when he gets in touch with his intention, when he is on board, then the teachings that the Buddha offers are these. So he says, Pugana, it is not proper for you, clansmen gone forth out of faith from the home life into homelessness, to associate overmuch with bhikkhunis. Okay, so that's one part. Therefore, if anyone speaks dispraise of those bhikkhunis in your presence, you should abandon any desire and any thoughts based on the household life, and therein you should remain thus. Now here it gets interesting. My mind will be unaffected, and I shall utter no evil words. I shall abide compassionate for his welfare, with a mind of loving kindness, without inner hate. This is how you should train, Pugana. So this last part, the refrain, the sentence, my mind shall be unaffected. This is basically a refrain that repeats over and over throughout the sutta as the Buddha raises the bar. So at first he says, okay, if somebody speaks negatively of the bhikkhunis, don't think of them. Don't think of this person with ill will. Abide in a mind of loving kindness. And then he says, and then he raises the bar. If someone, not just with harsh words, but with harsh actions, a blow with a hand, clawed or stroke of a knife, not just to them but to you, your mind should still abide in loving kindness. So basically, no matter what others do, no matter what harsh actions or words are directed towards you, either about you or about others, you shall train thus. Your mind will be unaffected, and I shall utter no evil words. I shall abide compassionate for his welfare with a mind of loving kindness, without inner hate. That's a pretty high bar, right? I mean, that's a pretty radical teaching, and it gets more radical. It's pretty interesting for us to reflect about our lives when others direct harsh words or actions towards us or about people that we care about. What do we do? What is the pattern of our actions and our mind? Do we have a regular pattern of action that we fall into, which is getting defensive right away and upset and hating the person who's doing whatever harsh words or actions are. So taking a moment to reflect, what do we do? What are the cases in our lives where harsh words and actions are directed to us, and how do we act? So we all have some kind of a pattern. And to make it worse, besides the patterns, the grooves that we already have in our minds and in our habit patterns in our life, just to make it a little worse, I think the cards are also stacked against us as humans a little bit. And our evolutionary inheritance makes it difficult. So so when we are in situations of severe stress, fear, or threat, what happens is that we feel threatened, our sympathetic nervous system goes into action, the limbic system, the amygdala lights up and hijacks, and we feel threatened, and neurotransmitters are released, and they activate the amygdala, triggering the brain's response to emotions, and most interestingly, they inhibit inhibition and rational thought. So let's keep that in mind also, that there is some evolutionary bias that us humans have. So not to say that it's hopeless, just to say that if it was easy, it wouldn't be a training, right? If it was easy, it would just be like breathing, and all of us, we would just, you know, have minds of loving kindness, and people would you know, curse at us when we're driving, or, and we'll be like, oh, may you be happy, you know, that would be natural. But it isn't, right? Because our mind hijacks and we have patterns. So, but are we stuck? Well, no, we're not stuck. There's a training, there's a path, and the suttas, they're teachings that tell us how to do the training. And there's also neuroscience and science telling us that, yes, you can train your mind in various ways with neuroplasticity to actually have a more peaceful, more loving, more relaxed, less activated, less easily triggered way of behaving and acting in the world. So kind of bring us back from neuroscience back to the suttas. It's a beautiful quote by Mahatma Gandhi I'd like to share. Your beliefs become your thoughts. Your thoughts become your words. Your words become your actions. Your actions become your habits. Your habits become your values. Your values become your destiny. Sure, I'll be glad to. Your beliefs become your thoughts. Your thoughts become your words. Your words become your actions. Your actions become your habits. Your habits become your values. And your values become your destiny. There is a chain, right? So how do we train? How do we train? I get back to the sutta. The sutta continues with offering actually how to train, how to go about it. Now he's given this radical teaching, and he's going to get more radical, and now he's going to offer some similes. So one instruction is abandon what is unwholesome and devote yourself to wholesome states. And he has this beautiful metaphor, this imagery here, of a big solitary grove near a village. And suppose there is this large, beautiful grove that you care about. And there are a lot of crooked saplings that rob the sap. So the way you would make this grove thrive is to cut down and throw out those crooked saplings that are robbing the sap, and you clean up the interior of the grove, and then you tend to the straight, well-formed saplings. Isn't that a beautiful image for our own practice, for our own life? Thinking about the habit patterns that we have that sap our energy. And there are some well-formed saplings. There's some habit patterns that we have that are really wholesome and beautiful and really nurture us and nurture our connections and people that we care about in our society and environment. Just what a beautiful image to think about. It's so clear of cleaning those saplings that sap your energy, your time, things that are not fruitful during your day, habit patterns. Watching television too much, right? Saps energy, saps time. Does anybody want to offer any of theirs? Don't feel shy.
Negative thoughts.
Negative thoughts. That's a good one. Yeah, thank you. It saps a lot of energy, doesn't it? That's a good one. Thank you.
Indiscriminate web surfing.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Maureen. Yeah, thank you. So,
too much social media.
Too much social media. Yeah. The mind goes bzzz. Yeah. I'm sure we could collectively come up with a whole long list of them, but I will move on. So, I would like you to get to, if that image works for you, to keep that image of this beautiful grove and these crooked saplings and these straight saplings. Just such a beautiful image to keep that about our life and about our habit patterns. What are the straight saplings to keep those, and what are the crooked ones? To say, maybe not that. Maybe I won't water that. Maybe I'll cut that one down. Then the sutta continues talking about latent tendencies. So it talks about a story of Mistress Videhika and her mate Kali. So the story is this, that Mistress Videhika was known to be fair and really kind and a really wonderful person. And her maid thought, you know what? She has a great reputation, but I actually think she's only really well-behaved and kind and saintly because I do everything perfectly around the house. And the maid mischievously decides to show the world or the village that actually, no, this person is not as saintly as they all think she is. So she decides to get up really late one morning, and the mistress comes and says, "It's late, you're not up yet. Why is that?" And she says, "No particular reason." Okay, she gets upset, she gets angry. The day goes on. The second day she says, "Oh, I'm going to try her again." So the maid Kali wakes up really late. The mistress is really angry again and says, "It's noon almost. Why have you slept so late?" She says, "No particular reason." Okay, the mistress is angry, but continues the third day. She sleeps even later. And the mistress is really angry, really just livid. And she asks, "Why are you still asleep?" And she says, "Yeah, no particular reason." So the mistress, being as angry as she is and livid, she takes something like a household item, and she hits the maid on the head, and there's water, there's blood flowing everywhere. So the maid rushes out, it's kind of a funny story, but I think so the point of it is that latent tendencies, right? So If you think you're very saintly, there might still be latent tendencies because you're not exposed to the right or to the wrong environment, to the people who really get you going. So Ram Dass has a great quote that is, "If you think you're so enlightened, go spend a week with your parents." So what's the point of this? Why is the Buddha bringing this story. One part is that actually throughout the suttas there's a lot of mischief and funny stories and a lot of humor. And this is kind of a mischievous, funny story, and there's a little more that I'll share with you here. But really the point of it is, I mean, as Ram Dass puts it, if you think you're so enlightened, go spend a week with your parents. Really, some of these habit patterns could be so deep that could be not known to us also, because we're not in the right environment. If everything is going well in your life, the job is good, the boss is happy, you know, blah blah blah, everything goes well, okay, you'll be happy. But when it's when things are not going well to your liking, you know, people are directing harsh words and harsh actions towards you, that is the real test of how much loving kindness in your heart and mind you can abide in for the other people. So I think that's the point here. So let's keep that in mind. And that also reminds me of in the Mahayana Zen tradition, and actually I think the Vajrayana too, in the Tibetan tradition, they say that your difficult person is your best teacher. You should really thank them for being in your life, because they show you all the ways in which you still have work to do. Otherwise, you would think, I'm enlightened, I'm done, I'm saintly, I'm this is great. You know, they really push your buttons and they show you the ways in which you still need to work and develop loving kindness in your heart and mind. The sutta then continues to talk about four courses of speech, and he says that there are five courses of speech. There are four ways, four types of speech that could be directed to you, and we could think of these as instructions. Speech could be timely or untimely, true or untrue, gentle or harsh, connected with good or with harm, spoken with a mind of loving kindness or with inner hate. So these could be used as a way to determine whether something is right speech, appropriate speech. So say you want to tell a friend something which is true and is gentle and it's for their own good, but they just lost their job and it's really a bad time, you know, it's not timely at all, so it would not be right speech. So these are categories, these are teachings for speech to keep in mind. And the way that this fits within this sutta is the Buddha teaches the monks that no matter what kind of speech is directed to you, even if it's untimely, untrue, harsh, connected with harm and with inner hate, no matter what it is, you shall, the training should be, our minds will remain unaffected and we shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for their welfare, with a mind of loving kindness, without inner hate. We shall abide pervading that person with a mind imbued with loving kindness. And starting with him, we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. I mean, for me, that's just beautiful to aspire to a mind, that kind of a mind, no matter what the circumstances and the outside, a mind of loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. Just poetry. Then he continues in the sutta, with four beautiful metaphors. Actually, the first one also has some humor and funniness in it that I like to share with you. It's kind of funny. So bhikkhus, suppose a man came with a hoe and a basket and said, "I shall make this great earth to be without earth." He would dig here and there, strew the soil here and there, spit here and there, and urinate here and there, saying, "Be without earth, be without earth." What do you think, bhikkhus? Could that man make this great earth be without earth? "No, venerable sir. Why is that?" "Because this great earth is deep and immeasurable. It is not easy to make it without earth. Eventually, the man would reap only weariness and disappointment." I think it's kind of funny, you know, the image of somebody huffing and puffing and trying to, you know, urinate on earth and spit, and just a funny image. But the really likening a mind of loving kindness, and that's what he does after that, saying that the same way that the earth, with a mind similar to the earth, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. So thinking about the quality that the earth has, really, really stable. It takes everything. You know, people can dig it, can spit on it, urinate on it. The earth is stable. It doesn't move. It doesn't care. What an image of a mind, right? And he continues with the next one being, if a person came up with paint and wanted to draw a picture on space, and he says that, can that be done? Well, no, because empty space is formless and non-manifestive. And the same way and with a mind similar to empty space, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, without ill will. So think of space. It's empty. Nothing sticks. The idea of that, you know, you can't paint, you can't pin anything on empty space, right? You can't sully it. You can't paint it. Think of a mind that has a quality of complete emptiness and spaciousness. You can direct any invective, any harsh words, any slur. It just doesn't stick, right? That is the quality of the mind to aspire to. The next is the metaphor of the river Ganges. Suppose a man came up with a blazing grass torch and said, "I shall heat up and burn away the river Ganges with this blazing grass torch." And that wouldn't work. Why, venerable sir? Because the river Ganges is deep and immense. And think of that image of a huge river, deep, immense, just flowing, cool, over rocks and over everything that's there. And no matter how much heat is directed to it, it doesn't get affected. And last but not the least, the beautiful metaphor that he offers is of a catskin bag that was rubbed, well rubbed, thoroughly well rubbed, soft, silky, rid of rustling, rid of crackling, and the man came with a stick or a pot shred and said, "There is this catskin bag that is rubbed, etc. I shall make it rustle and crackle, and can't do it, etc., because it's rid of rustling and cracking, and you cannot make it rustle and crack with a stick or pot shred." So here, if your mind is so smooth, you cannot make it crackled, you cannot make it rustle with a pot shred, just like that. If something is so smooth, it just cannot be done. So there are four different ways of imagining what abiding in this mind of a loving kindness would be. That's what he's trying to do. Give us some kind of a pointer that's what it feels like. Stability of earth, right? Complete stability, emptiness, nothing, nothing sticks, no color sticks, nothing. River Ganges, deep, immense, cool, just doesn't take heat, right? Cool and flowing, and not easily rustled. You just can't rustle it. It's just soft. It's a soft mind without crackles. So I invite you to take in all of the metaphors or any single one that works for you and just let it sit in your heart for a moment. Just imagine, just a sense of the earth, what that feels like, that stability of the mind or the emptiness of the mind where nothing sticks to it. Or if it were a river flowing coolly, no fire could burn it. Or a soft catskin bag that's so soft that nothing can make it rustle, nothing can make it crack. So the sutta then continues and culminates in its namesake, in the story of the namesake. So this is the simile of the saw, if you remember. I told you, right? And so far we've heard nothing about the saw. Okay, here it comes. Ready? Okay. So, bhikkhus, even if bandits, and bhikkhus for the newcomers, monks, so he's teaching the monks. Monks, even if bandits were to sever you savagely, limb by limb, with a two-handled saw, he who gave rise to a mind of hate towards them would not be carrying out my teaching. Wow. Whew. The bar was just raised a lot. Radical, beautiful, inspiring, amazing. So one thing that the sutta points to is that how we think and what we do and how we feel about others, the state of our mind, is really our responsibility. It's not theirs. You know, we've all thought at some point or said to someone at some point, you made me angry, right? You made me upset, right? Well, really, they didn't make you anything. You chose to. No one can make you, force you to do anything. They can create the causes and conditions that could give rise to states of mind more readily, but no one can make you anything until you decide to do it yourself. No one has control over your mind but yourself. And if you are giving them control over your mind, well, that's too bad, right? You don't want it. So control only lies in you. They create the causes and conditions, but you're the one who ultimately decides how to respond in a situation with loving kindness or with hatred or ill will or whatever it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, hang in there for a second.
Wait, Maureen wants to come and capture that.
Thank you. Hi. So I've been quiet for a while.
Yeah.
Silently arguing in my head. I see, I understand the peace that this would bring, and I see it. I've heard it before. But gosh, yeah, sometimes you have to tell somebody that's not okay. You know?
Yeah, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Oh,
you don't just go.
Awesome.
Let them walk on you, right? I mean, and this is real life.
I'm so glad you raised that, and I'll give you the check afterwards for raising that point. It's awesome, because that's the next thing I wanted to bring up. So, yeah, I absolutely agree. So, So I have to say, yes, that was actually my feeling too when I read the sutta as well. It was my own resistance. Like, there's no, we're here talking about self-defense and about, you know, am I supposed to be a wet noodle and let people walk over me, right? Okay, so great. I'm so glad you brought that up because that's life for you and I hope it's a life for other people too. Okay, great. So I want to read you a little story from Sharon Salzberg in a way of addressing that and then I'll directly address it. During the time that I was living in India, I was practicing, this is Sharon Salzberg, I was practicing in Bodh Gaya, which is the town where the Buddha was enlightened, and I went with a friend to go to Calcutta. When we wanted to return to Bodh Gaya, there was a riot in the streets, and the only form of transportation available to take us to the train station was a rickshaw. Now, to most of India, rickshaws are little carriages pulled by men on bicycles, but in Calcutta they run. We go on a rickshaw, and the man started running down some back streets and alleys, and as he went through one, an extremely drunken man came out of the shadows and grabbed him. He made him stop and then started pulling me off the rickshaw. I looked around, and I didn't see what seemed to me a single friendly face, and I thought, this is it. I'm going to be beaten. I'm going to be raped. I'm going to be killed. And then my friend managed to shove the man away and get the rickshaw driver to start running again. We got to the train station, boarded a train, and returned to Bodh Gaya, but I was still very shaken. I went up to one of my teachers, Munindra, and I told him what had happened. And he said to me, "Oh, Sharon, with all the loving kindness in your heart, you should have taken your umbrella and hit the man over the head with it." There is that possibility too. So it's about what the sutta says and doesn't say, right? The sutta does not say, be a wet noodle, you know, let people walk over you. It doesn't say that. It leaves open the possibility of taking the umbrella with all the compassion in your heart, but out of compassion also for yourself and the people that you care about, defending yourself, but without hate or ill will towards the other person, as long as the action comes out of love, out of care. Does that make sense?
Well, if someone were beating me, I don't think I'd be able to do it out of loving kindness, but I could see the other parts.
Yeah, well, we start with words, right? Words and harsh words and work ourselves up, you know. I think we have work to do to get to the Buddhahood. But I think there is that possibility. I really think there is that possibility where the action comes from. It looks very different. It's like, you know, a surgeon. I mean, if you see two people cutting, right, a surgeon could be cutting someone with a knife on an operating table, or a thief could be cutting someone open in the middle of a knife, stealing their belongings. They're both actions, but they come from a very different place, right, with very different intentions. If there is a situation, say, with harsh words coming towards you, wanting out of love both for yourself and for the person, like, wow, they're really suffering. I mean, they must be in so much pain to be saying these things to me, right? And speaking up, setting the record straight, but not from, oh, I hate you, you're terrible, you're just, how dare you, right? It's just very different places. Yeah, thank you. So, there are many strategies for cultivation. So this mind of a loving kindness doesn't arise out of nowhere, right? I mean, as I mentioned earlier, we have our habit patterns as humans, and we have our evolutionary baggage that directs us in a particular way. But there are many practices, like the metta practice, loving kindness practice, to really imbue the heart with love and kindness. mindfulness to actually bring attention to where the action is coming from, where the intention is coming from. Awareness of emotions, to know when you're caught, when you're angry, when you're upset, to actually be really aware of those. And also contemplation of the three characteristics, including contemplation of the impermanence and not self, or which basically is emptiness in this tradition. All these contemplations are different ways to get to the same point of developing a heart and mind of loving kindness that could perhaps in some lifetime live up to the simile of the saw itself, if bandits sever you savagely limb by limb. I'm not there, working towards it, but yes, one step at a time. So we have about 10 minutes left roughly, and I want to invite you to reflect, if you will, on what you heard tonight. If there was something that really spoke to you and inspired you about the simile of the saw, things that come up in your life about ways in which you are already skillful, things you have done, ways in which you want to go, or things that challenge you, as you brought up, and I'm so glad you did. So let's reflect for a moment and see what comes up. I'd love to hear from you. So I invite you to share, if you would please, some of your reflections and thoughts. Yeah.
The company where I work for is being sued by an individual. And it's been very difficult for me. There's lots of feelings of unjustness and all those things. So I've been really torn. This is very difficult. So this talk tonight is very enlightening for me. It's just more angles to look at it. But it's a struggle. It really is a struggle, because I really feel it's unfair. It's it's unfair for people to be mean. Mm-hmm. It's just, I feel that it's unfair. So this, it really weighs on me. Mm-hmm. And the piece about the compassion and everything, this individual comes from such a different background than myself, mm-hmm. or my son or anything like that. So part of me can understand, where it arises from, but then there's a part of me that also says, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Just wait a minute. So the talk has been very, very good for me.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Thank you. And it sounds like holding both, right? Holding both the, not condoning the action, mm-hmm. right? Having a mind of loving kindness or compassion does not mean condoning the action.
Right.
Right? It means not having ill will for another human being who lives and breathes and has had difficulties and wants to be happy, whatever their circumstances of their life too. They're a human being just like you. They're people who care about them. They care about people. It's just they have their own sets of causes and conditions. So having goodwill for the human being, but doesn't mean you condone what they do. You don't have to agree and condone what they do. Right. You can take actions, but knowing they're also a human being who with everything else that we go through, everyone else goes. So tapping into that common humanity so that the mind of loving kindness can come up, and still having wisdom to say, this is not right. So those two can be held together.
And that that example of the sapling and everything is so interesting, because I just think people generally, you know, we go through our lives and we develop habits, and, you know, some of them are not healthy at all, but they become steel rods after a while. I mean, beyond the little flimsy sapling. We're talking a steel rod, you know, and people's behaviors, you know, breaking those. I mean, even if you wanted to, they're very difficult. So there's that too. So that was a great example.
I've been reading a few pages every morning of Gil Fronsdale's book, and something is floating around about the idea that these negative emotions like anxiety, fear, the anger, the hatred, that the object isn't necessarily to push them away or deny them, that we all experience those things. And he actually used the example of the Sangha itself, that you know, our deepest intention is to practice compassion and kindness and peace, but we have to deal with where those emotions go, and it's sort of like integrating the shadow side of our own personality. And when we're engendering seeing a lot of negative emotions coming towards us from outside, it's really about the way we're dealing with those emotions within ourselves. And the idea is not necessarily to act on those emotions or feelings, but to fearlessly look at them, like to see them. And I just got a lot of mileage out of it. I really understood it this morning.
Great. Thank you so much for bringing that up, because that is the stepping stone to get to this place of the mind of loving kindness, after fearlessly looking at the emotions and understanding them and not suppressing them, just as you brought up. So thank you for bringing that up.
So I recently left a job after being treated rather poorly by many of my superiors for quite a while. And somewhere about a month ago, I got the inspiration to aim some loving kindness meditation at all the people who treated me so poorly. Mm-hmm. And I've got to say that more than anything else got me past the rage and anger that I felt towards them. You know, seeing them as people caught in all kinds of different webs that I don't know about, and they're all trying to make themselves as happy as possible, maybe not very skillfully, but I still haven't completely forgiven them. That's a completely different thing, but it was pretty amazing how effective it was.
Beautiful, beautiful. And thank you so much for sharing this as to the power that the practice has for you, for the freedom of your own heart and mind. It's not for other people, it's for you. Just the freedom, getting out of that prison of anger. Just thank you, thank you.
Reflection and question. In addition to somebody becoming hostile, another reaction to injury and insult is to buy into it, and especially if the person administering the injury insult is in a close relationship. Abusive relationships are an extreme example of that, where the victim buys into it, and I think that's equally hard to deal with, and maybe harder to see yet the motivation to turn it into an opportunity for loving kindness and forgiveness, that kind of thing.
Do you mean as a third person or as a second person who's buying into it? I'm not quite clear.
The victim buying into it.
And by buying into it, you mean?
Saying, oh, it must be my fault.
Oh.
Yeah, that's pretty common.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it seems like there must be a lot of difficulty for that person also. I mean, we think of the reaction to, you know, if you got attacked with somebody with saws or something like that.
Right.
How hard it is to think in terms of loving kindness. And it's probably also hard in a very different way for somebody who is in this, caught in this situation of buying into the abuse as being my fault.
Yeah.
And my question is, since with the bar raised so high, it makes me wonder, you being in pretty deep in the community of people that go, you know, or into the scriptures and things like that, how far have you seen people go in that direction? You know, I mean, we say we're working on it, but what kinds of examples have you seen of people who have really gotten that far?
Two parts to your question, right? The first and the second. Let me address the second one first, because that's the answer just popped into my mind. There's the story from the Dalai Lama, who met with a monk. This is written in his book, which book I read recently. I don't remember which of his books, but it is written in his book and is a story that I've heard very many places. So he meets the monk who was just released from the prison, or I guess from a Chinese prison, after being tortured quite dreadfully for many, many years, for a long time. And when he meets the Dalai Lama, he says, trying to remember the details, that he was really afraid, and Dalai Lama thinks that he means he was afraid for his life, and he says, no, I was really afraid. I was really close to losing my mind of loving kindness and giving into hatred, but I didn't. So, and that's the story that comes up for me, that yes, it is possible.
And the Dalai Lama is also a wonderful example.
And regarding the first case, the very complicated case of abuse and taking that on as in my fault, the mind of loving kindness sees no difference, does not differentiate between the other and the self. So it's imbued for loving kindness, not just for others, but for the self. There's no difference between the two. Or there shouldn't be.
No, I didn't mean that as a question. I just saw it as a reflection, as something that people don't normally think of as an opportunity to, or as an example of where that might come in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, thank you.
I'd like to share a quote.
Yes, please.
I've heard it attributed to...
can you use the microphone?
Sure, yeah. Green
light.
Yeah, so I've heard this quote attributed to the Talmud and also to Plato. I'm not sure which one. But it resonates for me. And it basically says, be kind to everyone, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's loving kindness, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's seeing the common humanity, that everyone is suffering. Even you don't see them, you don't see the stories, but you know everybody in this room, I guarantee, has some difficulty in their lives, or has had, or will. And tapping into that brings up compassion. So With that, I think that's a great place to end, given that it is 9:02. I'm sorry we ran 2 minutes late. So I want to thank you so much for coming here tonight, for your practice and for your participation. And let us dedicate the merit of our practice tonight, our intention, to the liberation of all living beings everywhere. Thank you.